Last November, I got together with my friends Todd and Carrie Alexander, and they put on an incredible event. The first annual Grenache Fest was held in Walla Walla, Washington on November 3rd, 2023. It featured 12 Grenache wines from Washington State producers. After the seminar, which was moderated by yours truly, there was a concert featuring Stephen Malkmus from the 90s underground grunge band Pavement, M. Ward, and Mark Pickerel, who is returning this year as our musical director. It was hands down one of the best wine events I've ever attended. And it was such a success that we're doing it again this year. Save the date, November 8th, 2024. If you're a producer wanting to pour your wines, if you want to volunteer, or if you simply want to attend this year's event, go to GrenacheFest.com and sign up on our email list to be the first to know regarding all things about this year's event. Hi, I'm Marvin John Tallett, also known as MJ or the Black Wine Guy. I have worked in all facets of the wine business and have the distinction of being the world's first ever African-American fine and rare wine auctioneer. These days, I'm a journalist and podcaster, traveling the globe, having conversations with some of the most fascinating people in the world. In this show, I'm talking to the movers, shakers, and disruptors who inhabit the world of food, wine, music, and more. They'll share their experiences on how they made it, but more importantly, how they failed and got back up again. So grab a glass and let's get to it. This is Beats, Vines, and Life, where music, wine, and life collide. Hey everybody, what's up? It's your boy MJ. Welcome to Beats, Vines, and Life. My guest today is the president and founder of the German Wine Collection, Jenna Fields. With over 15 years working in German wine, Jenna is regarded as one of the leading experts in the category. She launched the German Wine Collection in 2020 after the retirement of the iconic Rudy Wiest in 2019, whom she had worked for her entire career. Now, the German Wine Collection is the only import company 100% dedicated to German wine, representing 22 of the top wineries and working with over 50 distributors nationwide. Welcome, Jenna.
Thank you. Thank you so much again for giving this platform to German wine.
Speaking of German wine, what wine did you bring today?
Okay, so I wanted to bring something a little special that, you know, I will never find or drink again. I brought I brought a 2015 Grosses Gewächs Spätburgunder or Pinot Noir from the Farwinger Vineyard site from Meyerneckel in the Ahr Valley. And this winery, the entire village was destroyed from a flood in 2021.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
And the cellars, everything. And so the sisters that run the estate now for their father, Werner, Maike and Dorte, they are rebuilding. They're using like this land that their grandfather purchased at the top of their vineyard sites to completely rebuild. And what's incredible is these are super high elevation, like cliff-like 60% grade vineyard sites that were unharmed. They had too much rain, but they were unharmed. And so you don't find the, you know, older GGs anymore. And so the few bottles we had, we talked to the sisters, do you want them back? And she said, just use them with good purpose. So I thought I'd bring a bottle today.
This is if there's been one thing that doing this podcast has been, got to taste some really special bottles of wine. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to open it and taste it and drink it and kind of remind us what we do. And also, like, German Pinot Noir, I scream it from the mountains.
Well, I mean, it's really amazingly delicious. Just the nose, just rich and dense, you know, we'll get into it, but, you know, I've had Lyle Foss on, and, you know, he's a big proponent of German Pinot Noir,
yeah.
And we were talking before, Robert Dentis, Soil Pimp, who was, I can't believe he was, like, episode 20-something, like, it's crazy.
Oh, wow, a while ago.
And he's loves German wines, biggest collector of German
Huge
wines
supporter.
In America.
Yeah, big impact.
I think you said you're going to hang out with him later tonight.
I am,
yeah,
yes.
Which really,
when
I'm
in
like,
New York.
Now I'm like, yeah, sure, go. They're going to, like, the Kellers are going to come out.
You can hop on the train.
Might have to.
You can hop on the train.
And then, you know, then we have to do a Pinot Noir study. So, you know, Robert's a guy like, we might have to pull a DRC versus, like that's how that shit goes down with Robert.
Yeah. And it's important because still you pull out a German Pinot Noir and people are flabbergasted. They're like, what? Yeah. Germans with Pinot. Yeah. The third largest producer of Pinot Noir in the world behind France and America. And nobody knows it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is cool. It's an opportunity.
And Robert said this a while. This was like at a Riesling study, maybe, I don't know, maybe 18 months ago, but like. You know, because of climate change, which I'm sure I'm like, looks like Germany's going to win the Pinot Wars.
Yeah, well, you look at this, like 2015, this is a warmer vintage.
Yeah.
Not all the way, you know, northern Germany in Dernau, in the Ahr. This is still a cooler vintage. Steep slope Pinot Noir, great acidity, great minerality.
Yeah. All right, so let's go back. Let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
Where are you from?
I was born in San Diego, California, but then moved to the Twin Cities, to a town called Eagan, when I was 2 years old. So I grew up in Minnesota. I grew up in Eagan on a lake. I mean, as everybody does in Minnesota, that's not that special. a brother that's 2.5 years younger than me. We are best friends.
Okay.
My best friend. And yeah, we had a nice childhood in Minnesota, and I don't know.
So you grew up in Eagan, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Outside the Twin Cities.
Yep.
You have a younger brother.
Mm-hmm.
And did you play sports? You know, did you do all the bits? See, in my mind, I'm like, okay, you're on a lake. Did you figure skate? Did your brother play ice hockey? Did you go sledding down the hill?
All the things. Yes, we lived on a lake. We would shovel the lake off and go skating. Neither one of us were like great in sports, but we tried everything. We were like super passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I spent my whole childhood dancing. That's what I ice skated. I was horrible. I like did track, got lapped doing hurdles and fell over one and hurt my knee. I mean, it was bad. So once I found dance, that was it for me. And that's what I did, all the way until I was 15 when, my brother and I moved with my mom to Southern California.
Okay. So mom and dad, what did they do? It sounds like they split at some point.
Yes.
Okay.
When I was 15.
When you were in Minnesota, what were your parents doing? What were like? What'd your parents do for a living?
Yeah, nothing to do with wine. They were both in the medical field.
Okay.
Now
are you being modest? Is like, was someone a doctor? Or like, did someone sell medical devices? Like, or
sold medical devices?
Okay,
exactly.
Fine.
My dad was a medical device salesman.
No, because some people like feel shame. Like, mom, like, what was medical field?
Yeah, he's a brain.
Yeah, my dad was
he was
first
a brain
surgeon to successfully do this.
No. My dad started a company where they would
Dad started a company. See, this is why it's important, because you know I run your own company.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is the thing. Okay, so your dad started a company.
Yeah. He came into play with his company much later, but yeah. So my dad refurbished used medical equipment from all over the world and sold it to hospitals. And my mom was a pediatric nurse.
That's not easy to do either. That's for specialized.
It is for a special type.
Matter
of
fact,
person.
You now see management. Like, so I had on the podcast episode 100, Travis, and sorry guys, I just got back from Paso Robles. I'm really kind of loopy. Can't remember. I want to say Travis. Night. I want. It's not. Anyway, Kobayashi Winery. Mm. Travis is a pediatric. Anesthesiologist.
Oh, wow.
And he loves it because when you talk about like Pierre, like he's like, if you have just like, I don't know the metric system because I'm from America, but if you have just like 1 milliliter more of the anesthesia, like it's like.
It's a serious job.
Yeah, it's a serious, working with children, because it's serious. If a child has to have surgery, it's serious. Like they can't withstand.
Yeah.
We have this, it's like babies and old people, they're very susceptible, you know, mm-hmm. So that's good for your mom.
I don't know how she does it, but what she would always say is like, if I could just have the smallest impact helping a family through like the most difficult time, she worked with terminally ill patients for quite some time. She's worked in the ER. She's kind of floated around Children's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, if I can make that experience for them just a little bit better, then it's worth it. And she's able to do that, and it takes a really special person to do that. So, yeah, I'm really proud of my mom.
For sure.
She just retired a couple years ago.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And now she gets to be a pediatric nurse for my children.
Yeah, exactly. So. Like, you don't have to worry. You know, your kids are in good hands, right?
Better than with me. She's a pediatric nurse.
Yeah. And you drink for a living. Yeah, they're better off.
It's all a good combination. It all works out.
Life's about checks and balances.
We've got it. We've got it.
That's great. So then your parents split. And
yeah.
And I guess she had a job in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So Midwestern girl.
Yes.
Gets to move out to California.
Nightmare.
Really?
Horrible.
Really?
Horrible. I thought, because my grandparents always lived in Del Mar in Southern California. So this was like California dreaming. We'd get to go there for Christmas break. We'd spend summers there. This is just the greatest place on earth. And I always knew I was going to live there. I love being from Minnesota. I love that experience. I still have very close friends in Minnesota that I go visit. But I knew I was going to be in California. I loved it. I went there, though, moving there 6 weeks into my sophomore year of high school and being from a small town where, like, everybody knows everybody, it was, like, an absolute nightmare. Like, Mean Girl Central, I'm eating lunch in a bathroom stall. It was horrible. I mean, looking back on it now, I'm grateful for the experience. It was, like, character building, but at the time, it was, like, hell on earth.
Yeah, you know, because guys just can fight. You can just punch someone in the face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Girls like, are nasty.
Like, but unless, like, you're, like, most women just don't punch, like, literally, if a guy, like, you know, and matter of fact, you might know, like, all right, I'm going to have to punch somebody in the face because I'm a new kid in school, right? Like,
you never went through my mind that I was going to have to punch someone in the face.
Well, I'm glad it didn't, but.
Yeah.
But, so, I mean, yeah, like. It's different, right? So, like, I mean, because, like, high schools and especially San Diego, like, the perfect, most perfect weather, probably, and also one of the most perfect weather schemes in the world.
Yep.
But, like, the lunch tables are outside, and you're like, and there's usually a mountain. Like, when I went out to California, I'm like, who, how, like, you see some of these athletic fields, like, there's the football field, and there's the mountains over there.
It's pretty crazy, but because the weather's so good, it's like an outdoor school. So
right,
like,
exactly.
They call it an outdoor school. I call it, we're like learning in trailers. Like, I don't know, like, it's, you know, I came from Minnesota. We had a nice indoor school. There was a library in the middle. It was like 4 stories tall. This is trailers in a yard, and we call it, you know, public high school. I don't know. It was all weird. Yeah.
So did that get better? I mean, so, and that's tough too. I mean, it's always tough to move in high school, no matter what.
Yes.
And sophomore, you know, like you feel like you're getting your footing in your high school because the freshman year's over, and then you're like middle of sophomore year.
Yeah. Everyone found their crew,
right?
And I come in,
yeah,
and just tried to, you know, find my way. And I just kind of made it through.
Okay.
Until I went to college, and that was like super impactful, great experience.
Speaking of which, where did you go to college?
Well, this is where wine comes in. I went to Sonoma State.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. So why Sonoma State? Because you got San Diego. I mean, like, you went all, I mean, like, you skipped, like, L.A.
Uh-huh.
There's great schools in San Diego, but then you skipped L.A. Are there good schools in Orange County? I don't know. What college is in Orange County? No, Orange County's got, like, no diss if you're Christian, but there's like Christian colleges.
Yeah, yeah. All those community colleges. Yeah. And yeah, there's Long Beach State.
Oh, there's Cal State, Fullerton.
Fullerton, yeah. Long Beach State. There's those.
But then like you bypass UCSB.
I wasn't getting into there. No, I went to school with like a 90% acceptance rate. yeah. So my uncle went to Sonoma State and had a great experience.
Okay.
And I knew, like, none of my high school friends were going to college. And I knew I wanted to go to college. And I knew I had
what
to get away. I graduated high school in 2004.
Okay, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I decided I wanted to go far away, but I had to stay within in-state tuition.
Sure.
And my uncle's like, well, how about Sonoma State? And so I applied, and they accepted me. And so, yeah, I went to Sonoma State just off my uncle's recommendation and being far away from home. And I also heard that, like, 90% of the students live on campus, which was great. So, if, like, from the start, after my high school experience, from the start, I could make friends.
Right.
And, yeah.
Where's Sonoma State again?
It's in Rohnert Park.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which is
yeah, so it's, like, an hour north of San Francisco.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So you're, like, far enough away from all the trouble, but... like, because there's nothing going on in Rohnert Park. We figured out ways to make things happen, but...
It's college.
It was college.
Well, college is going on.
Yeah.
If there's a college,
mm-hmm.
there's stuff to do.
Yeah.
I was in college.
Yeah, and we all lived on campus, and they're all...
And all campus. Yeah. Oh, my God.
We all lived on campus. They're all my best friends now, all my girlfriends, guy friends. There's 8 of us girlfriends that still get together for dinner every single month from college. Like, those were my life people.
Did you do the sorority thing?
No. They did, and I just went as their dates to the stuff, so I didn't have to actually go to the meetings and all the, you know, bullshit stuff. But the fun things, I went. Yeah.
Okay.
I was working all of college, so.
Mm-hmm. And what, you went on your uncle's recommendation, but
yeah.
When you left high school, did you know what you wanted to major in?
No. So I just kind of
went to that bastion of liberal arts education.
Right. I'm like something in business. So okay. I did. Yeah. I majored in business. And when I went there, I needed to get a job. So I started nannying for winemakers.
This is going to be great. This episode's getting started, y'all.
Yeah. So I'm a nanny for a winemaking family. I babysit. I was a good babysitter. So I was passed around between families, the Holdridges, the Passalacquas, the Raffinellis. And I babysat for these families. And then junior year of college, I had to get an internship. So I said to them, well, why don't I work the tasting rooms? You stay home with the kids and I'll kind of run things and hire my friends.
Take care of your own bratty ass kids.
I'll do the winery part. No, their kids were great.
I know.
Yeah, yeah. The kids were great, but it was nice to be wineries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
cool.
Yeah.
So I started in a taster room with John and Carrie Holdridge.
Okay.
In the
What's their brand?
Holdridge.
It is Holdridge. So how many cases are they doing? Because this is what I love. When I was living in California, that's what I loved about. Because I love California wines. That's the only wine country I lived in. But like everybody, like there's so many great wines, but they only make 1,000 cases. So they just sell through their tasting room on the mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe they get submitted for scores. Maybe they don't. But like, you go into town and it's like, oh no, you got to try the Holdridge Pinot. It's fucking sick.
Everyone
you know,
in
they,
town loves
they got
Holdridges.
This block over here because they've been you know. This business, and I will tell you, life is all about relationships.
Yes.
The mm-hmm. better you are at creating relationships, meaningful relationships with people, you know. So the Holdridge, you're working there at the taste room. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the best wine segue stories I've heard. Like, I was a nanny.
But this is why I always love asking people, unless you're born into a winemaking family, unless you're born into it, how did you get here?
Well,
I love asking people.
Right. No, that is always the question, right?
Like, yeah, because I know that I wasn't necessarily destined for this at all. Don't come from a family that even really drank wine. So this was very random for me, but it was just kind of my path from opportunity here, opportunity there, and, you know, asking a ton of questions and learning along the way.
So you're working in the tasting room. Did you... continue to work for them? Did you move to other tasting before you graduated, or I just stayed with the Holdridges until I graduated?
I stayed with the Holdridges and the Passalacquas, and it turned into one of the main women that I nannied for. She started a wine concierge business called Sips, and that's when we got to go to all sorts of different wineries, and we would set up corporate events at wineries for people and like set up a picnic in the vineyard and make the magic happen as the helicopter's landing and then run away and just be like these magical fairies in the vineyard setting up. It was awful. But it was fun and we loved it. And I figured out very quickly that was the part of the business that I didn't necessarily care for, but the families, the stories, all of that, I loved it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even at that time, I had no idea that I was going to stay in the wine industry at all.
Yeah.
I was going to graduate college in, you know, a month. No idea what I was going to do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so graduation's rolling around.
Yep. And I get this envelope in the mail. It's from my college boyfriend's mom. She's a bank teller. And she said that it was just a business card to this guy, Rudy Viest, with a pink Post-it on it. He owns a wine company. You should give him a call. That was it.
Couple things. That's old school as hell because, I mean, we were full on email in 2004.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
So I love that. I love that as a letter.
But you had to take it seriously. It's easy to ignore an email.
It really
a business
is.
Card you get with a pink
but
Post-it.
But an email from was your ex boyfriend's mother?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, you're gonna ignore an email from your ex boyfriend's mom?
I got mail, like
yeah, I know, but like
physical mail with a business card from at the time it was my boyfriend. His mom was I later found out saw this check that Rudy was depositing. He would always deposit his own checks,
fat ass check,
and it said at the top, Sellers International. That was the import company, like seller, like a wine seller. So she's like, oh, what's this wine company? My son's girlfriend likes wine, and they started talking, and so she asked, do you have a business card? And she mailed it to me, and I called him. And we were on the phone for a couple hours. And then he had this tour called Rudy Palooza back in the day, where he brought a bunch of German winemakers across the country. And so he's like, well, why don't you come to Rudy Palooza in La Jolla? And I was up in Sonoma.
Okay.
And we can talk and send me your references and a resume. So I put together a resume, went to Express and bought a suit and traveled down to San Diego and went to Rudy Palooza and tried my very first Riesling with like Hanno Zilliken and Ott von Kuno of Von Hovel and Robert Imile from Munchoff. And yeah, and I just knew from being in wineries that you know, bring a journal and you take notes. And I just kind of walked around in my cheap suit and took notes. And yeah, he wanted to hire me. I didn't know for what. I had no idea.
Okay. So clearly your ex-boyfriend's mother thought you were a really good girlfriend. And that her son fucked up. So, respect to us.
No. Good guy. Not meant to be. But meant to be because, you know, it's the connection of it all, which is crazy. It's the connector.
I love Rudy Palooza.
Yeah. There's posters every year. Like, you know, like concerts. Like you would have a concert tour.
I love people who are feeling themselves. He was. I mean, obviously the wines. I mean, like, you know what? It's not German wine, it's Riesling. So dope.
Yeah, now you see the name of the company that I have. It's a little different. Yeah, I'm like, no, it's not about me. Please don't make it about me ever. I'll just be in the background. Let the growers shine. Yeah, but I mean, to his credit, he really built something. He was the first. Rudy Palooza was. And that was the first like big German tour around the country.
Okay, so perfect. I could talk about Sonoma State, and I could talk about you eating a sandwich out of a brown bag in a toilet stall with your feet up so no one could know you.
Awful. Horrible. Yeah, we're beyond those years. Thank God.
But, so you talk about Rudy. So there was this other guy, and you could talk about this. There was a guy called Terry Thies.
Oh, yeah.
Who was the guy I got introduced to German wines through being started in New York at Acker. It was like,
yep.
Like Terry Thies was the German wine guy.
Absolutely.
So what, I'm sure they knew each other. What was kind of like the, what's the deal between Terry Thies? And I know Terry Thies had other shit going on. But anyway, but like.
Yeah, but beyond that, and so did Rudy. German, yeah, but right, beyond that, right. They get a ton of credit right. For German wine in the United States.
Did they, were they friends or were they rivals?
No. Yeah. Like, nah. Yeah, no. Two dudes. You know,
fighting for the
wine.
Best producers, mm-hmm. Right?
And so yeah, there was always tension there. They were huge competitors. So yeah, it was you know, Rudy was on the West Coast.
Okay,
he was, you know,
that's a different.
So
thing.
Anybody,
so
that
it was
grew
like
up, yeah,
you were with Pac, Terry was Biggie.
Yeah, they would love that.
I know. Yeah, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah, so they did.
Michael
not
Skernick would be Puffy.
Yeah. No, but it's interesting, and that's where I think the biggest opportunity was, or is now, is that those guys did not get along, mm-hmm. And my huge mission now is to be collaborative,
mm-hmm.
Because if we're all fighting for one spot on a restaurant list, or we're fighting to have, like, two spots on, like, other worldly whites, what the fuck is the point?
Yeah.
We got to build it.
Yeah.
We got to come together and build it. We got to build awareness and understanding, and it's not that people don't like German wine, they're just unknown. So I really feel that yes, what they did was super important, and we have German wine in the United States in the capacity that we do because of Rudy Wiest and Terry Thies. But now, what do we do with this next generation? We build it. We work together to build awareness and understanding. And there's nothing to compete over until we build something to actually, you know, a share on a restaurant list.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you go to that event. In your Express suit. I used to shop at Express, but Express.
There's nothing wrong with it.
I mean, actually, it's.
I looked ridiculous. Everyone was like in Hawaiian shirts and.
Oh, well, jeans. It's California, right?
Like, yeah, I looked stupid.
You didn't look so, you stood out. They're like, she's professional.
Yeah, no, I, because of that experience, I'm very careful about like what I wear with where I'm going, because you don't ever want to look like a tourist, right?
Right.
So, like, I wore a suit to San Diego. You don't do that. just like
you. Well, could, when you're coming out of college and you're looking for a job, you do. I would hope.
You wouldn't dress casual in Las Vegas. Las Vegas is the suit and stilettos. Or you wear like a floral print maxi dress when you sell wine in Hawaii. Or you wear, you know, jeans and your boots when you sell wine in Montana or Colorado. I call them like my, you know, travel costumes. Because you never want to look like a tourist. I don't know. There's different appropriate dress depending on where you are. And that all started with wearing a suit to Rudy Palooza in San Diego.
All right. So you mentioned you brought your journal. You mentioned tasting some of these first wines for the first time. Mm-hmm. And him wanting to hire you.
Yeah.
So he makes you an offer. You accept.
Mm.
No?
There you go. Well, he said that he wanted, he's like, you know, we could use a sales rep in Los Angeles. Never lived in Los Angeles. My dad, like, took me, you know, to Beverly Hills just kind of to check off that box. I went to Disneyland as a kid. I knew nothing about Los Angeles. And I'm like, I look like I know nothing. You can't throw me in there. So I had heard that he had a customer trip coming up to Germany. So I said, I can't set myself up for failure here and just be a sales rep for German wine in Los Angeles. I don't know anything. I need to see it. I need to meet the people. And so he offered to let me go on that customer trip to Germany a couple weeks after my college graduation. I was trying to figure out if I was going to go work for Target Corporate because I'm from Minnesota and that's like a big path for
me. No, I know. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I was like, I'm going to go.
Live a good life.
Yeah. Work for Target. I was in talks with Gallo, or I was going to go to Germany with this crazy German guy. And the most exciting thing to me as a 22-year-old, I'm going to Germany.
I mean, come on, that's a no-brainer.
No-brainer.
I mean,
I'm going to Germany.
I'm going to go work at Target. I mean, it's
that
super
was the
safe
one that was easily eliminated.
No, no,
yeah.
Still, I mean, like, you know, go work at Target for 20 years, you're making $250,000.
Yeah, yeah.
So why not?
Yeah.
You know?
Just wasn't my
path. I wish I knew shit about that, but I can't work for anybody anyway. So,
no.
I admire people that. And then, like, I mean.
Yeah, that would have been a lot easier, you know, simpler, but then it has its other complications, but it wasn't my path.
But, what you said was so, I just made me laugh. You're like, so you're working for this iconic importer. Maybe you don't say he's iconic, but.
Yes,
and he's like,
iconic.
He's going to make you, you know, go work the LA market. And you're like, no. Nowadays, he'd be like, well, I have my WSET1, I'll do it.
I had none of that. Still
and that's
don't.
What I'm saying. There's none of, that's my whole point about the wine business.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so many people who, like, have done things or doing things. Or just it's out of the patch for the wine, and I like and not tied to. I used to work in education, so I have and I.
Okay.
Default on my I have the whole student loan thing, so I'm like, yeah, that wasn't a really good ROI. so I don't necessarily.
There's that.
I don't necessarily know like, I never want to dissuade anyone per se, but just because you have this piece of paper doesn't mean you're going to get the job because there's so much goes into it.
Right. I mean, education's important. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
however,
but
anything if you don't know how to apply it or use it.
But do, like once you're like, even out of high school, but once you like, so say once you've gone to college, you don't know how to read and study by your fucking self.
Yeah, right.
Like so much of it's for validation. People need to be validated. Like this says I can do it. Well. No, it doesn't. It says you have a piece of paper. So it doesn't say you could do it.
Right.
And for me, I'm someone who does stuff. Like, that's how I learn. But anyway.
Yeah.
So. I just like that you took the adventure.
Yeah, I went for the adventure. And I thought, I mean, I'm 22 years old. I'll go to Germany. What, you know, this will be fine.
It's first time ever out of the country? Besides Mexico.
Besides Mexico.
Yeah, Mexico.
I'm like, yeah, obviously I've gone to Mexico. First time out of the country.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I absolutely fell in love with it and never looked back. I knew on that first trip this is what I was going to do.
Where'd you
I
go
knew.
On that first trip?
Flew into Frankfurt.
Okay.
We went everywhere. We always had this joke that we'd go to first, like Weingut Paul first. We'd go to first, and we go in there. There's no Riesling. It's so I'm like, okay, I'm going to taste a bunch of sweet Riesling, you know, just like any other American consumer that knows a tiny bit about wine. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a bunch of sweet wine. No, very first stop at first in the Franken region. And everything was, it was Pinot Noir. It was Pinot Blanc. It was Chardonnay. Mm. I was, why don't we know about this? It was crazy. And what I realized very quickly from going to wine bars and restaurants on that very first trip, I would look at the wine list. It's 90% dry. And so I asked the question, I won't name the wineries, but I asked a couple different wineries, when we're drinking the sweet wine, like, oh, like what percentage, you know, of the total makeup of your production is this Riesling? And a few of them said that they were producing sweet wine specifically for the United States because Americans love sugar.
They ain't wrong.
No.
I mean, overall,
we love Coca-Cola.
We're the fattest obese country in the world.
They're like, yeah.
I mean, technically, they're not wrong.
Right. So there was a lot of sweet wine getting made just to export to the United States. And I'm like, you know, sitting there and I'm there with some MSs and, you know, I'm just going to shut up. But I just remember thinking, that's not true. Like, I want an authentic experience. I want to know, what are you passionate about? What's your family history? What do you do here? Let's bring that to the United States, mm-hmm. because that's what's impactful. That's what matters. And that's how we're going to change the perception on German wine. Because immediately what I thought I was going to Germany to taste and mm-hmm. to do was completely different from what actually happened. And yes, there's some of the best sweet Riesling on the planet in Germany, but bring it in a way that makes historical sense. Like, this family's been around since the 1100s, or they've been producing this since the 1300s, and this is what they solely focus on. Like, say, like J.J. Prune. They solely focus on Riesling with residual sugar. Great. That makes historical sense. But there's a lot of wineries where that's not what they do. And so I was just super passionate after that to talk to people about, like, oh, okay, German wine, so a bunch of sweet Riesling. No! There's some really great sweet Riesling, but that's not the whole picture.
And for me, as like someone who's worked retail, I'm like, okay, well, what's wrong with sweet wine? That's the flip side, right? It's a double-edged sword for me, right?
Because, nothing.
Exactly. The flip side is that people who think they know about wine go, oh, sweet wine. I'm like, you ever heard of Chateau Akim? Like, some of the fucking finest wines in the world are sweet wines there, buddy. Mm-hmm. All right? So it's weird, this whole thing, because like you said, like, every region is more than people know, right?
Right. And I really didn't understand sweet wine, and that's why I'm so passionate about, like, food and wine pairing, mm-hmm. because both should elevate each other. And so as far as when I'm, you know, 22 years old drinking wine, I'm like, oh, it's sweet. But Rudy took me, we were on a work trip in Las Vegas, okay. and he took me to Lotus of Siam. And all the dishes, I'm from Minnesota. They were so spicy. And he handed me a glass, and it was, I believe it was like 2009, Fritz Hogg, Brandenburg-Eifer, Spätlese, I actually remember it. And it put the fire out of my palate. And it was right. the first exactly. time I understood food and wine pairing.
Yep.
And from that moment, I'm like, ooh, like, I just had this experience, and now I get to use it as part of the education behind German wine, food pairings, it all comes together. Would I sit and drink, you know, a glass of Auslese all day? No, I wouldn't. But depending on what's on my plate, whether it's spicy Thai food or stinky cheese or something like that, absolutely, that's the right wine.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when it really changed things for me.
So how long was that first trip?
2 weeks.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We went to 26 wineries in 2 weeks. Yeah.
And what? And you went to Franken first. Where else did mm-hmm. you go?
We went to Franken, we went to the Mosel, we went to Rheinhessen, went to the Ahr. I remember we went to Meyer-Nickel on that first trip. We went all the way down to Stuttgart and visited Schneidmann. We went to the Baden region by the Kaiserstuhl. We went to the Pfalz, and I got to do the, like, I'm in France, I'm in Germany dance at one of at the Becker Winery, which was super fun. I still do that to this day. Because 70% of the vineyards are actually Alsatian, but they're grandfathered in as German because that border's kind of moved around a little bit.
Because of war.
Yeah.
Because of deals.
Yeah. We get to go in the tower there, and we just call it the Princess Tower now.
Almost dropped the H-bomb. I was like, because he cut good deals.
Yeah. So
it's history.
It is.
History. H stands for history. The history bomb.
H stands for history, yes. So, yeah, we went all over on that trip. And so I got to see, I mean, all over with the wine regions.
Sure. But, I mean, I don't have a map. I'm not that sophisticated. You can see we're actually in a barrel room.
Yeah.
In Red Bank.
I mean, clearly.
Yeah. Look at us. Barrel room. But just for the educational purposes, talk about, like, you can just go, this is here and this is down here in Germany, and somebody might, you know, figure out, like, start at the north.
Yes.
And south, how your trip so involved, that first
trip. The way my brain works is Frankfurt.
Okay.
The plane lands in Frankfurt. And then always in Franken, we go to first.
Okay.
And that can be kind of an hour-ish, hour and a half. I mean, it's the Autobahn, so it depends on how familiar you are with it and how comfortable you are driving.
Drazen Petrovic's very familiar with it.
Yes. Yes. And then, so usually, you start in Frankfurt, and it's like an hour east of
Okay.
Frankfurt,
go east. Okay. Mm-hmm.
We're going to go east. And then you go south. And to the south, and it's always, they're always outliers. They're always out of the way. When you go to Baden and Stuttgart, and why they're not normally visited, but they're super important. So Baden goes all the way to the Swiss border. And then there's Stuttgart. And then on your way back up, you're right on the Alsatian border when you're going to Pfalz. So that's always cool. And that's where you get, like, this traditional, like, limestone soil, like you have over the border. And that's where it got super interesting for me because of the history of Pinot Noir. And even now we're talking about Chardonnay, and that's a big conversation. And, you know, with the proximity to France, and it does make sense. And then you go up to the Mosel, Rheinhessen, and Rheingau. And then you go all the way up to the R, which we have in our glass from Meyerneckel, which is interesting because it's the furthest northern growing region. But they're known for Pinot Noir. And people get very confused by that. But I was talking with Dorte Neckel, and they actually had Pinot planting documents from 550 AD in that area in Dernau. So it's a big loop.
Okay.
It's a big loop. And there are drive days that are, because people, especially like you think of the faults, like, oh, you're just in one region for the day. No, we've been in the car for 4 hours in between wineries. It's huge. Mm-hmm. And Rheinhessen is even bigger. So it's a lot of drive time. It's a lot of leaving the hotels at 6 in the morning, getting back to the hotels after midnight. We're trying to find a better way now. we're rotating. We're having wineries that our friends come together and meet us in certain places so that it's not such a grueling trip for everybody. But it's always fun. It's always worth it. We have our German fire drills that were started by Rudy's son. And we still do it to this day, where you have to get out of the car, chug a beer, get back in the car on the way to the next winery.
Like, that's
you're like, this could be many different things. No, it's chugging it. It's chugging a Bitburger. It's not that serious. Yeah.
So you come back from that trip, and what would, like?
I had to move to Los Angeles. All right, I'm going to do this. I have to move to LA.
You're like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was completely on my own. I moved to L.A.
So, full stop real quick.
Yes.
Your first job in the wine business was the sales rep for Los Angeles County. Because it was like, most companies that
it's
break
nuts.
It up.
It's
like
crazy.
The west side, east side. Like,
all of it.
Because there's so many rest. I mean, L.A.'s.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you've been there, I don't think people actually understand how big L.A. is. As a city, as a major American city, most cities are compact. Well, most cities on the East Coast, right? But LA is.
You'd be going 2 miles, it takes you an hour.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like, I almost worked as a sales rep in LA, and I was just going to have the West Side. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to have the West Side.
Uh huh. No, no.
And I was stupid because I just moved from New York, and I didn't realize like that was the shit. They were giving me Beverly Hills, Santa Monica, and fucking Malibu. I'm an idiot. But then I wouldn't be here with you guys.
Right? It all works out.
Be somewhere
it all works
better,
out.
Probably. But
yeah, that was like
it.
My...
I mean, Jenna's dope. Don't get me wrong. I know all my listeners, you're dope. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you know.
I do. And I would say that, I mean, yeah, that was my first job in wine. I mean, I was in restaurants.
But then you could go into Chinois on Main and be like, oh my God, for your spicy calamaro, chef, Wolfgang.
Yeah, we sold.
You need this.
Yes. Yeah, and that because of those experiences with food and wine and why these wines are important, why they're historically important. And it was all so overwhelming for me, though, because it was at the time it was 26 wineries. And Rudy had this gift of he would talk to a master sommelier and somebody off the street in the exact same way about wine.
That's amazing.
So a lot of times I would just try to be a sponge, let him talk at me, mm-hmm. and then get off the call, Google things, make flashcards. I was like the queen of flashcards between these appointments because I'm in Los Angeles. People know their shit. And German wine is a category that people, you know, if they were on, you know, the Somme track, it was the category that they had the most questions about. So I really had to know what I was doing. So I just started with a couple wineries at a time where we would have like different regions represented, and I would study my flashcards in the car. So I was like, how am I going to do this? And I would just go out with what I was comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Like I went to Germany, so much information. Let me get comfortable with it. Let me marinate in what I just experienced. And I would just do a few wineries at a time. And then maybe the next month I would add another one or another two wineries on. And so now with like the whole national distribution network, I always go to that exact same like method. Like just start with a few, get comfortable, and then we can expand from there. Because otherwise it's too overwhelming and nobody wants to do what they don't want. Nobody wants to expose what they don't know.
Right.
Right? Nobody wants to go out there and be like, hey, I'm a total idiot. I have these wines I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's all part of the game. It's education. It's getting wines in the glass. It's getting an understanding for what German wine is as a whole. Because it's all very new as far as an accurate representation of German wine.
Right on. Mm-hmm. No, that's a perfect time to take a quick break. We're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to deep dive into Jenna here hitting the streets of L.A.
Oh, gosh.
So we'll be right back in a moment.
Hey, I don't know if I told you guys this earlier, but last year, Grenache Fest sold out within 72 hours. So if you want to be there on November 8th, 2024, make sure that you go over to GrenacheFest.com and sign up for the email list so you will be the first to know when tickets go on sale. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. This was a one-of-a-kind wine and music festival like no other I've ever seen before. Don't miss out. Go to GrenacheFest.com for more information.
Okay, we're back. So I love that you riding around in your car with flashcards.
Yeah.
And I also the philosophy of starting small, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go with what you know.
Go with what you know. Don't get pretend
those
to know things.
Yeah, get those placements. You know they're solid. You know this is going to work. And then can read some more flashcards and come back with, you know, three or four more wines next time you go see them. I do dig that approach. I've never asked this question, but this is so great because you were so green. You're 22. You're just in the wine business,
yeah,
and selling and German wines. Like, you know, like you're an attractive woman. You could just went to work for Southern and made a fucking shit ton of money.
I would have been bored.
You made a ton of money.
Well, though. Thanks for saying that, but I would have been bored. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's never really.
Everybody I know who worked for Southern in California is retired now. Yeah. But anyway,
this is true.
But I do love. But this goes back to who you are. Right? Like you chose the adventure. So
yeah.
The Still question is though, what when you got that first sale, what was your, do you remember your first sale and how you felt?
Oh my gosh. The very first sale was probably at, I think it was the Green Blots. It closed during COVID, which was devastating. Green Blots Delicatessen on Sunset. It was right next to the Laugh Factory.
Oh.
And it was this Jewish delicatessen. And they had this like whole cellar underneath the store. So it's like kind of weird. You got to like carry your wine bag down this tiny little narrow stairway. Yeah. And I remember the owner, Jeff Clavin, Rudy used to sell to his father. And so I was kind of set up on appointments where they kind of knew the wines. It got more complicated from there because I had to get people to care and want to place German wines. But I had to, he had this beautiful shop on the side of this Greenblatt's Delicatessen. And so I didn't know how it worked. I thought we were going to be tasting there. No. We went down the stairs, like, into the basement, like, kicked through boxes to go to his, like, back office and, you know, and taste some wine. And I remember tasting through the lineup, and he's like, all right, I'll take three cases of this. I'll take two cases of that, one case of that. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, that's how this works. Okay, yeah, let me write it down. We'll get that delivered to you. I got my, like, pastrami on rye sandwich on the way out.
I bet.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Yeah. Yeah, my dad's Jewish. I love a good delicatessen. I grew up on that stuff. So that was
mustard,
one of
just
the
straight just you
no, it has to have mustard. Yeah. And the coleslaw, the whole deal. Yeah, so that was probably one of the first.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then that's got to be a great feeling. But then like you said, you had to start educating people, so like so that was great. But let's talk about like you know, LA iconic restaurants.
Yeah.
Like, what was the
Those
first?
Were the big flashcards. Yeah. Like when I'm going into Spago to taste
MS.
Did
you get into Spago?
Yes.
How did you get inspired?
And I decided to do a different approach there.
Okay.
So at the time when I started with Rudy, Chris Miller was the MS that was running everything for Wolfgang Puck. And I just brought him off-the-wall stuff that you wouldn't necessarily taste every day, because it's like he gets to taste everything. Right. So we ended up like getting a glass pour placement with box boitles of Sylvaner, which was really exciting, and something cool that you could take on the floor and like this is gonna, you know, entice people to ask about a story,
right?
Stuff like that. The second time I tasted with him, I only brought Pinot Noir, and this was like back in the day.
I know, I'm blown away. Yeah, like
yeah. Yeah, only Pinot Noir. And we went into like the back little like alley sidewalk with their Somme team and tasted through 8 different Pinots, I think 5 different regions. Yeah, and got and built a nice little Pinot section on their list, which is still, I think it was like that moment where I'm like, this is what we need to do. We need to actually have a spot for the wine, right? Because if we go around tasting, you know, Lemberger from Württemberg and Spätburgunder from different parts of Germany, if there isn't a place for it on the list, then whatever, it's great for education, but how are we going to make a business out of it? So it's really expanding the minds where this deserves a place on the list.
And you know what deserves an explanation for the listeners? I don't know if anybody listens to this shit anymore, but you know, for people who don't know, tell them Lemberger, Blaufränkisch,
yes,
Spätburgunder. Just a quick breakdown.
Yeah, Lemberger is Blaufränkisch.
Yep. But why is it some people call it Lemberger versus Blaufränkisch?
It's where it's from. So, and Lemberger actually is only grown in Germany in Württemberg.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they can actually have Grand Cru Lemberger in Württemberg. So that's where it's really paid attention to. So with, you know, when you're designating Grand Crus and these sites and everything, it's regionally with what you can actually grow. So like you can only grow Grand Cru Sylvaner in Franken. Obviously from the first time that everything was classified, you could do Grand Cru Pinot Noir in the R. And so I'm just thinking about like what other things are. Like say, I mean, we talk about Scheurebe all the time, and that's Riesling.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time here on the podcast.
We do. We're a very small part of the population. I understand that.
I'm giving you to talk to people about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Scheurebe, but I call that like the gateway for the U.S. palate, the Sauvignon Blanc drinker. Wine bar, Scheurebe, and that's Riesling and Bouquet.
Everybody knows that. Yeah, Scheurebe. It's like Scheurebe.
You say it with confidence. No one's going to question you.
I know. That's why I say everything with confidence. Yeah. Fact-check the shit out of me, whatever. Because I'll just talk loud. No, anyway. But how do you say it? Scheurebe?
Scheurebe. Yeah, so it's Dr. George Scheu. He named it like his grape.
So there you go. Mm-hmm. We need the Scheurebe revolution because people order Sancerre and don't even know it's fucking Sauvignon Blanc anyway. So
right. So then why not have them drink Scheurebe?
That's sexier than Sancerre. Even come on, it's even harder to say.
Yes.
You have a Sancerre. Yeah, you know what I mean.
A Sancerre.
Yeah, Sancerre.
Sancerre.
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to get sexy, Scheurebe.
Scheurebe. Yeah, yeah, we get really excited about Scheurebe.
And then also, this is like, I don't know, but this is fun for me because I've been going to Riesling study for a few years, and then Robert would be like,
so great that Robert does
with the Sylvaner after party. Like, it's like,
yes, Sylvaner for the people. We're doing like this whole Sylvaner like summit in Chicago this year.
Shut up.
Yeah, yeah, we're just attending. There's amazing people Sylvaner Summit is in May. We're super excited.
What are the dates?
Oh my gosh. It's May. It's Mother's Day weekend. It's May 11th, May 10th, that Saturday. So yeah, we're going to do a whole like.
That'll probably be the week this episode drops, but I just want to know in case I might try and get there. That was more for me than you.
I'll send you an invite. Sylvaner Summit. It's important. Yeah. Yeah. There's the Sylvaner Summit guys, Patrick, and then Valerie Kathawala from Trink Magazine. They're behind it.
Oh yeah. Valerie. Uh-huh. Yes.
Valerie's great.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So anything like that like we could be a part of, it's like absolutely.
The Schwartz wine guy.
The Schwartz. like Schwartz Riesling?
Yeah.
See, that's where my head goes. But I'm just a nerd. I'm going to sit over here with my Spätburgunder.
She's got her Spätburgunder. I got my German Pinot Noir.
Yes.
No, anyway. No, sounds great. So, yeah. So, I love that because, well, I mean, you to this day, I mean, you're going to consistently be in the education business.
Always.
Because of, I mean, even when you look at wines from Europe, mm-hmm. it's France and Italy. I mean, everybody's been making wine just as long.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But like, everybody and their great grandmother knows Chianti. Mm-hmm. Right? I want to say everybody knows Bordeaux, but people have heard Bordeaux.
Yeah.
People like, this is my favorite when I sell retail. I want a white Burgundy. How much you want to spend? About $20, right? So it's okay. So you take them to like the Le Flave. They had Le Sutil, which used to be $20.
Yeah.
And it says Chardonnay. I'm like, oh no, I don't want Chardonnay. So you know you're an education business because people think they know something about. Oh, I want white Burgundy, but they don't know even mm-hmm. the grape it's fucking made from.
Right.
So you're dealing with, and then Germany, people think, I don't know if they think Chianti is grape, but you know, they don't understand. It's not just Sangiovese, and I can't say the other grapes you can put in there, you know, but like, so you have grapes, you know, and German is the anti-European language. Like it's not a romance language per se, right? If you like people in Europe, if they grew up native Italian, Spanish or French, they can easily speak French, Spanish, Italian.
Yeah.
Easily. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. German goes off in a whole different direction.
Something. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're always going to be in the education business. So thank you for breaking those grapes down. Now, that being said, coming back, you're getting these placements, you're going out in the alleys with Psalms and pouring them Pinot Noirs and
yeah,
making it happen. What's next for you in L.A.? Like, do you become like a manager for Rudy, or just like, you know what, you're doing so good in LA, now I want you to do Ventura in Santa Barbara. Like, what mm-hmm. kind of like, what happened?
Yeah, so I did well in LA. So then I also got San Francisco.
Oh.
So I was spending 1 week out of every month flying to San Francisco.
I was like, see, that's not the best. That's not a bad gig. She was like, okay, so you got San Francisco, mm-hmm. which I learned when I was in California, like, For California, the city is San Francisco. It's not L.A. San Francisco is considered a city. That was when I was there in like 99. Like, no, they called San Francisco a city because it was the closest thing they thought to New York.
Yeah.
Okay.
San Francisco is a city. Right. But like, they couldn't be more different. Like,
right.
San Francisco
oh, no.
versus
NorCal
L.A.
NorCal versus SoCal, baby.
No. So it was a lot to get into and figure it out.
Went down to, this guy's awesome with the fucking janitor.
We're vacuuming the hallway.
I know. Anyway, just
that's all right. We're
allowed. It's totally fine. I know, but it's fine. It's not, they'll edit out, but I'd like to weave everything into the podcast.
Yeah, this is the experience we're having.
Exactly.
The vacuum's outside the door.
Yeah,
it still is. This
I was
must
like,
be
what?
A
I was like, what is going on?
No,
he's just trying to get home, man.
I get it. Get your job done.
So they're completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different demographics.
Totally different. Handled different. Appointments are different. Everything was different about going to San Francisco. And then you have, like, you're a wine rep, and you're staying at, like, the cheapest hotel possible. Like, my rule was, like, I just can't have a door to a parking lot. My dad called Rudy about that. Like, she can't have a door to a parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, like, we need to have an inside hallway.
Can't have your Motel 6 door, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was just in the crappiest
hotel. I love
that
your dad called.
Oh, yeah. All the time. Lots of conversations between my parents and Rudy. But, like, yeah, no, she's not going to do that, but she could do this.
Oh, so this is awesome. I got to digress. So, like, your dad stayed in Minnesota?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
He stayed in
uh-huh.
Minnesota.
I saw him on the flight on the way out here. I stopped in Minneapolis, saw my dad.
That's super sad.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But, like, so, yeah, you are 22. Like, mm-hmm. they couldn't have been, like, and Rudy's, like, this guy. Taking my 22-year-old daughter to Germany for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. they must have like been like, boop, 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 boop.
Yeah, yeah. Both my parents talked to Rudy before I went to Germany. Yeah, yeah. And he had to talk about like who was going to be on the trip and what the itinerary and what it all looked like. And so immediately my parents always had a good relationship with Rudy because Rudy also never turned business off, which was, you know, one of the great things about him. He would call like on Christmas morning and be like, whatever happened with the buyer at Republique in LA? I'd be like, Rudy, it's Christmas morning. Oh, Merry Christmas. Is your mom there? Let me tell her Merry Christmas. You know, that's just kind of how it was. So my parents were always involved
with
it.
Okay.
Yeah. And if Rudy went to Minnesota, he would go to dinner with my dad. My parents were always involved.
All right. That's mm-hmm. really cool. That's
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So you hit the San Francisco market.
Mm-hmm. Yep. living out of hotels. You know, there were never like mini fridges, and if we had a mini fridge, the bottles are too tall. It's bristling. Yeah. Bottles are too tall for the mini fridge. So I would be filling like sinks and trash cans up with ice.
Oh, trash can. It's always a trash can. It's always a trash can.
Putting all the samples in there.
You know, when you're on road, I mean, just as a consumer sometimes, like, they don't put good shit in the fucking cooler.
Yeah, no.
No, it's
mm-mm.
like, you know.
No. Mm-mm.
So you're going to have to, and the trash can is just the way to go. The ice bucket's way too small. You'll be waiting fucking 3 hours.
When I think about the caliber of wines I used to put in trash cans. No. I still do when you have to. It's chilled. You know what? It's chilled. It tastes great. This is how it happened. You don't need to know how it happened. You don't need to look at the background. But I think about that when people are like, oh, the wine business. It's so glamorous.
I know. People have no idea.
It's glamorous 1% of the time.
Exactly.
It's glamorous 1% of the time. Like, we are case schleppers. We're figuring out how to chill wine anywhere, like anywhere and everywhere. We're logistics people. We're compliance people. I mean, that's what we do.
I mean, as an importer, you got compliance. The whole hospitality, like, people think I'm like even being a chef, right?
Yeah.
Fucking a sous chef, be at a Michelin star restaurant, making $15 an hour, working 15 hours a day.
Yeah.
And get fucking hollered at for chopping an onion wrong.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I just think, like, you know, with reality TV, people think, oh, this is so glamorous. You know what I mean? Like, it's just you have to love it.
It's not glamorous.
And you have to love all of it, right? Like, like you said, like making wine. Like, what do you do? You know, it's got to be, well, that's what I'm going to go on at. But, like, it should be clean in your winery, right? Unless you're trying to make a bad wine, right? Like, and so somebody's got to clean.
Someone's got to clean it. But that's where, like, my biggest rule is, like, I started in restaurants as I was, like, the breadstick host. I stood with a bowl of breadsticks as a greeter and then got promoted to a busser and then, like, at a pizza place where you walk up and order. And that should be just a human requirement to understand how it all works and have that humility and be treated the absolute worst.
Mm-hmm.
It's just important as a human being to go through that. Mm-hmm. And not enough people do, and it's very obvious when they haven't.
Oh, no. Trust me. I got a friend who has some restaurants and hired someone, and this young lady was complaining because her drinks weren't up at the bar, you know, like, what's going on? And that never really worked out well. And literally, he was like, if you thinking you can do fucking do a better job, go behind the counter. And she ended up suing him. Like, getting insane. Like, this is a fucking restaurant.
Oh, no. People are horrible.
Like you should never worked in a restaurant if you can't have somebody say, shut the fuck up. Seriously, you should never work in a restaurant.
Right.
If you can't help somebody tell you, shut the fuck up.
Because
you're going to get told to shut the fuck up in a restaurant daily.
Daily. It's going to happen.
How dare you talk to me that way? I just wanted to make some money. I have no love for this.
Oh, man.
Anyway. No, I love that. So you're paying your dues. Like, you're like, I killed it. He's like, yeah, now go do it again.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
And so, and when you say San Francisco, though, I have to think about San Francisco, obviously, but did it extend over to the east side of the Bay? Because you had to have Chez Panisse. Chez Panisse is one of the most iconic restaurants in America, really shaped things. So that had to be one of your... So you had to then go over to the side of the Bay. Even if it was just to go to Chez Panisse, you had to go over to the other side of the Bay.
Yeah, not very often, though, because when you had such little time, there's such a concentration of restaurants. And so what's really hard is you have to be super smart about your time. So, like, at the end of the day, with sales and concentration of restaurants, it's like, what Michelin star restaurants are in this area that I can hit in one day?
Got it.
So it was very focused in that way. So I didn't make it outside of, like, San Francisco proper much. But I had really good experiences there. I got to...
Now, there's some serious Asian and particularly Chinese restaurants there. I would have to assume you had to get your wines, like, into these... And there's every Asian community in every city in America now. But like you're like, oh my God, this Thai restaurant, they got to have this. You got to, like, was that?
Yeah, that was always a thing. That was always a thing for me. But for me, that was my first experience with food and wine pairing. So what I was passionate about early on is, yes, Thai food and Riesling, like all the sense in the world. And, like, we have Thai food, like, I get Thai takeout, I'm opening a Cabbie Finer. Like, that's happening. But then, like, if we're going to expand the narrative and expand the conversation, like, right now, one of my like most recent favorite pairings is at my local, like one of the local restaurants, Goat and Vine in my town. And they have this amazing turkey sandwich and they pour one of our Pinot Blancs, Wagner Semple Pinot Blanc by the glass. And it's so good. And it's like everyone comes here for lunch every single day for the sandwiches. And their turkey sandwich is the most popular. And so it's like, this is the perfect pairing. It has brie cheese. It has like this amazing balsamic compote and the turkey and the bitterness of the arugula. And it's perfect with this Wagner Stempel Pinot Blanc from the Rheinhessen. And so that's an everyday thing. That's like, oh, people are having a sandwich for lunch. Here's a perfect glass of white wine to pair with it. So I feel like we have to think outside of it, yeah, right? Outside of like the classic pairings that have, you know, kind of kept German wine in a box. And all of it is still very important, but how can we, in like restaurants and cafes where people go daily,
yep,
how do we get them to understand the food and wine pairing element and apply German wine there? And like with a turkey sandwich.
Like, damn, who would ever thought of a turkey sandwich with wine?
Pinot Blanc.
And then And then Pinot Blanc.
Yeah.
And then German Pinot Blanc.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to
Pinot Blanc's an interesting grape.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jim Clenenden from ABC, I remember when I met him years ago, he actually believed more in Pinot Blanc than Chardonnay as a as a conduit of terroir. And then again, Kermit Lynch really believes Aligoté is a better conduit of terroir than Chardonnay. Wow.
Yeah, the two are so intertwined.
Yeah.
With a lot of our wineries, as we're kind of exploring German Chardonnay, it wasn't even legal until the early 90s. And so they were labeling their Chardonnay as Pinot Blanc.
Wow.
Because that was allowed in the faults, but you couldn't legally grow and label Chardonnay. So before it was even legal in the faults.
Now, was that an EU thing or a German? Was it a VDP? What's a German organization?
VDP.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, yeah. I knew something.
Yeah. So when we're talking about classified varietals, yep, that's actually a big conversation in Germany right now. So in Baden, there is already GG Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. But then the conversation with a lot of the growers, and we've had the privilege of being a part of some of these conversations, the big concern is that Chardonnay will be in fashion and a lot of the old Riesling vines will be
ripped
up. Well,
that's always my That's what I said, so that's what I feel. It's always my fear is when things come in fashion.
Yeah.
Because when I came into business in 98, 97, you know, I didn't know anything about wine. Like you said, it's like these weird connections. I had met John Capon, like, through a girlfriend.
Really?
Right, yeah. So, like, that's how I got into wine, like, oldest wine store in America. Like, and just, like, your bank teller, like, these weird
things. I love
that. How people get into wine. But I remember, and then talking to his father, Michael, and I didn't know anything because I knew about wine, the judgment of Paris, right? Mm-hmm. So, and people just ripped up Sangiovese, Zinfandel, mm-hmm, Petite Sirah, and Napa Valley, and all those do extremely well. And if somebody's still growing them, then they become more expensive. But like to plant Cabernet, and I'm not saying Cabernet doesn't do well, but like, yeah, like German, like, yes, Germany is more than Riesling, but you don't want fucking people pulling up these old vine Riesling vineyards.
That's a concern.
Exactly. That always becomes a concern when the commercial and it's a business. I get it.
Yeah.
But it gets scary, right? Because people are like, fuck that. We're the new Burgundy. They're just going to just rip it up and start, you know.
Well, and that's where they're really focusing on, you know, especially in the faults where this is a big conversation. Like, who are the growers that are very well known for the other Burgundian, you know, mm-hmm, grape varieties? And having these vineyard sites that make sense, that historically since the 90s have been growing Chardonnay, so that you can't do that and that they could be designated. And so it's always been a grape designation by region, mm-hmm, but now they're like, is that the best way so that we can protect these historic sites? Are we going to classify it by grower or site? So it's a big conversation, and it's an interesting conversation to sit there and listen generationally to.
I'll bet.
Yeah, to the fathers and sons, or, you know, with the daughters. Like, what are we going to do moving forward? And, you know, are we going to classify Chardonnay? So it's a big thing going on right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And talk about that for a while, like the generations. Because we somewhere in this conversation, I don't know if it was in the previous segment, but you're like, Dan Vine's Pinot Noir, 550 AD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're not... You were talking with people whose families have made wine for not decades,
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, millennia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's that like? Where, and I love like the conversation. So, for instance, yeah, so it was father, sons, and now there's more daughters. There are more women in the mix.
That's been huge. It's been so influential to be able to witness the smooth transition from the fathers to daughters. And we see it in so many wineries in Germany. It's huge. We have, you know, Katharina Prum. We have, you know, at Meyerneckel, we have Dorte and Micah taking over for their father. At Romland, a sect house that we represent in Rheinhessen, we have Mary Louisa and Katharina taking over for their father, Volker. There are so many examples of it. Andrea Versching, she's the 14th generation female. And so it's really interesting to watch. And for me, with, you know, I don't want to get into imposter syndrome and all of that, and but not feeling like I'm worthy of this role or I could do this role, really watching these transitions at these wineries, we're like, well, maybe, you know, a female can, you know, lead this portfolio to the next generation. So it's actually been a huge impact in my life to watch it all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine. Okay, so then you conquer San Francisco.
You don't conquer anything in this business. You know, we'll always be there. We'll always be working there. But yeah, so I managed. Then I had, you know, two major markets in the state of California.
You had the two major markets.
Come on. A lot of German wine in Bakersfield.
Yeah, come on. You know you wanted that Inland Empire route.
I did. I had it. Yeah. I did. I got a Mannschaft Erzige Wurstgarten cabinet at Spaghi's. It's an Italian restaurant in Upland, California. Worked with, yeah, the Packing House wine merchants in Claremont. I had the whole Inland Empire.
What?
I had the desert.
And like, what would be like, you like if I'm, what would be your most proud wine placement? Like, what would be your most proud wine placement?
Oh my gosh. My most proud wine placement was probably opening Providence in Los Angeles and getting a Riesling on their tasting menu. Mm-hmm. Because that happened in my first year of working for Rudy. Yeah, I don't know. I probably could come up with 100 different answers for that. But in this moment, I guess it would be Providence.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. It's like any restaurant where there's people that, you know, if you're going to Providence, you're doing the tasting menu. You know a little bit about food and wine. And to have them try something where it's like this perfect pairing, that could change things. And that can make them think differently about German wine. And so at the end of the day, that's the goal.
That's really cool. So going back to like, we never really conquer anything, but like at one point
I kept moving around the country. That's for sure.
Okay, so you kept moving around the country. Where'd you go next?
Oh my gosh. So I did California, and then I had like the full western region because I went to Hawaii, which has always been a great market for these wines.
Actually, talk about Hawaii as a market, because Hawaii is a huge wine market, believe it or not. I remember.
Yeah.
I worked for Chambers and Chambers for a hot second.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, when I lived out there. And Hawaii was a huge market, wine market, believe it or not, like for them.
Yeah.
Why is that? Because you went, because obviously then you got to go to Hawaii. See, this is what's cool about being a sales rep on the West Coast. You might get Hawaii.
Yep, you might get Hawaii. And Hawaii, there's, I think for German wine, there's a few different reasons. Well, I mean, for just wine in general, the weather's always great, right?
Yeah.
There's tourism year round. So that plays a role on it being a great market. But then also with all of the cuisine there, you know, these especially with the white wines from Germany, they work
the diverse Pan-Asian cuisine.
Well. Yep. And then also with German wine, Rudy had a long history of going there. I mean, yeah, shocking. He loved Hawaii. The winemakers
Rudy sounds like a guy who liked to party.
The winemakers loved to go to Hawaii. So there were a lot of trips, Hawaii food and wine. There were a lot of trips to Hawaii. And then also there's a master sommelier out there, Chuck Faria, that is a huge advocate for German wine. And he's a big educator on the islands. And so he's getting the young Somms to understand German wine very early on as a classic pairing, a go-to pairings with so much of their cuisine. So I think there's a few different, you know, factors with that being such a great market. And yeah, people want to go there. And so, you know, you're going to have a high concentration of fine wine out there, besides the logistics, which suck. But yeah.
When you fly it out there, or did you put it on a boat?
You have to put it on a boat.
Yeah.
And then when the boat is slow, then you have to fly it. When you have something on a tasting venue or there's a wine dinner, then you're flying it anyways, and the boat arrives 2 weeks later. So the logistics of Hawaii aren't necessarily the greatest. But yeah, it's always been a great market for us.
So did you continue to move east? Like, you know, so you'd have like the western half. So you have, you know, mm-hmm. California, Arizona, New Mexico, blah.
Yeah, I had like the western region. And then I ended up at the end of Rudy Vist, at the end of the company, I had the whole country. So I didn't.
How many people were working for Rudy?
In the height of Rudy Palooza, there were 12 to 15 people.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you, but you were the queen bee.
No.
No.
Nope. I always liked being in the background.
The queen bee is in the background. Everybody goes gets her shit for and brings.
No, I was the one getting all the shit.
Okay.
I was very much getting all the shit. I would set the stage for the magic to happen and then disappear to the back.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For seminars and all of that, I would set the stage for Rudy and then I would disappear, which is why kind of, you know, being in this role isn't my most comfortable thing. It's just, it's not. It's like, oh my gosh, now I'm the one that has to speak. Mm-hmm. I need to be the educator. I mean, I guess in some capacity I was always doing that. But I was always just, setting the stage for him to run the show.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at the height, it was.
So when you said you had the whole country, though, but when you have the whole country, are you overseeing people or like how do you mean? You have
no,
the
it was like
country?
Towards the end of the company.
Okay.
And at the end, it was just me and him. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you go from 12 to 15 to just back down to 2?
It happened over several years. I mean, it's a classic story of Rudy was so passionate, he couldn't let it go.
Okay.
So he's in his 80s. I watched so many people come and go, and it's like, this is going to be the person that we're going to continue it with. And we had so many wonderful people to carry on the company. We really did. And at the end of the day, he couldn't let anyone else run it. So, I mean, his passion is what built it. But then also, you know, was to his detriment at the end.
That's they talk about that's a problem a lot of entrepreneurs can have, unless you're like a serial entrepreneur. Like,
yeah.
Also, a lot of politicians don't want to step down either.
Oh yeah, really? I've never heard of that.
A lot of Supreme Court justices. Love you, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Should have got out a long time ago. You know, people don't know when to let go. Like you know.
Yeah.
I mean? Okay, so
yeah, classic story of that.
Okay, so but you stayed with him. What inspired you to be there till the end?
Stubbornness. I couldn't go. I just couldn't. There had to be a way forward. Like it being over was never a possibility.
I mean, but
in my
I would
mind.
Have to. I would have to think. No, I get it. I really appreciate it. That's a rare quality nowadays too. Like loyalty, right?
Yeah.
But I would have to think at that point. You could have, like, even this is 5 years in, you probably could have went to him, but like 10 years in, decade in, right?
Yeah.
You could have went, and you could have came to New York and said, "Hey, Mike Harmon,
yeah,
I'll run your German shit," and they would have been like, "Sure." Like, I would have think you could have went anywhere and did it.
Yeah. Well, they have great people there too.
No, I know the people, but I'm just saying, like, but like, if you want, I mean, but people, there's people who can get fucking jobs, right? You like, you've proven like.
I could have gotten a job in German wine, yes.
They know
who,
exactly. They know,
that.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right?
I felt confident about that, but it wasn't these growers.
So talk about that. It wasn't these growers, because that, I there was a serious passion and love. She's tearing up even.
I mean, there has to be.
I mean, she like loves these people, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, some of them, these are the 14th generation, the 20th generation, and the United States is their biggest export market. This, how this all panned out mattered to these families.
Mm.
And I kept almost, I don't want to say blindly, but telling them, I'll figure it out. There's going to be a way. This is not over. This isn't over. So, you know, I'm hearing chatter of like, you know, it's going down. You got to jump ship. You got to jump ship.
Well, I know. And then like, this is also a business of vultures. People are circling and like, yo.
Talking to the growers.
Start plucking people away from Rudy. Rudy's book is going down. He's going down.
Oh, all that was happening.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And you can't fault anybody for that.
No.
Of
I mean,
course,
that's just business.
It's an opportunity.
No,
it's business.
Yeah, no.
It's business. And so I kept saying, hold on, we're going to figure out a solution. We are all more powerful together. Like, this is the only 100% German-only portfolio, and it's the historic portfolio in the United States. This matters. It needs another generation. And so I spent 2 years bringing people in, like trying to find people to, you know, invest with Rudy Wiese, buy Rudy Wiese, continue it, because it mattered and it needed another generation. I mean, with German wine, there's still, it's not that people don't like German wine, it's just misunderstood.
I mean, it's just, yeah, I mean, it's just, the rest is, it's unwritten still.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it needed more time. It needed another generation. And I'm just like pinching myself that like we get to do it. And I say we because I've brought a lot of the, you know, former employees where I said, if I figure something out, you're coming with. And I got to do that. And that's something I'm very proud about.
Meanwhile, you're doing all this. You have 2 children?
Yeah. One was a baby when all this happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this goes back to my mom I was talking about, the pediatric nurse. Yeah, my mom, my aunt, the babysitter. And
yeah, is there a Mr. Fields?
No, there isn't.
Right, that's what I was kind of getting at. So like,
yeah.
So you're a single mom.
Yes. Yes,
doing all this
mom.
Shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
But you know, people always are saying that like as a mom, you can't be in this industry.
No, I know. That's why I love what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's
but
why I want you to tell that story because people are like, no, I can't. I got kids. Yeah.
No, you absolutely can. You just have to find a spot within this industry. Like for me, it was sales because I can revolve everything around my kids' schedules. Like our Germany trip we have in April is around my daughter's dance competitions. Okay, I gotta be here for this dance competition. I gotta be back for this dance competition, and we can fit the whole tour in this time so I can be at the dance competitions. So things that matter, I'm absolutely there. And, you know, I have a son, but for my daughter who's 11, it's been so important whether, you know, she wants to work in a nail salon and design homes right now, but someday, She saw what's been built.
Yeah.
And she saw her mom working. And the stuff I need to be at, I'm there. So I can completely revolve my schedule. And, of course, I get to work on all time zones. So, like, I can talk to the Germans at 5 in the morning and be on Zooms before they wake up and all of that. And I can put them to bed and, you know, the Germans wake up and, you know, keep going till 2 a.m. So I can really – all the time. So I can really revolve my schedule around the kids.
Mm-hmm. She's clearly a better dancer than you are.
She is. Yes, she is. She is. I'm fully supporting it. And also, she's in middle school. She can't have free time. So I put her in everything. Figure out what your thing is. You are going to be occupied 7 days a week. And she is. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really cool. What did your parents have been really involved in your career. You mentioned that.
Yeah.
What do they think of what you're doing now?
They're really proud, which is why I have like full support. They're very proud and they never doubted it. If they would have told me, jump ship, go get a different job, I don't know if the German Wine Collection would be here. It was their support, my brother's support, my very close girlfriends that, you know, you'll figure it out. You'll find a way.
Yeah, so you always had that. So at some point, it came down to like, well, if it's going to be, it's going to be. How did you figure this out? Because you're here with me now.
Yes, I'm here.
How did you figure it out?
The German Wine Collection is here.
Yeah.
Through one of our wineries, Andrea Wersching, she was close friends with the owner of Kartäuserhof. It's the 8th oldest winery in the world. They were established in 1335.
Glad I asked that question.
Yeah.
Shit would have just got stepped over.
Yeah. So it was the connection through one of the wineries. And she was talking to Rudy about, you know, Kartäuserhof could be interested in having an import company. And so Rudy was going to fly out to New York with his wife to meet with a potential investor who was the owner of Kartäuserhof. And so Rudy's wife said, well, Jenna, you have to come with. You have to be a part of it because, you know, it was Rudy's in his 80s and this is, was a lot. And so I started talking with the business advisor and he had me put together this whole business plan for how we were going to continue Rudy V selections and all of that. So I was just there in the background. So he had this big investor meeting. We had a lot of investor meetings.
Sure.
We had this big investor meeting in New York and Rudy comes out for the meeting in a tracksuit, and it's like, no, you got to put on a collar, and you know. So I send him back up the elevator, and I get in a cab with him to go meet with this investor, and it did not go well. It didn't go well, yeah, you know. Yeah. Even though coaching him, and I made sure that they had the business plan ahead of time, and it didn't go well. And you know, Rudy's Rudy, and this was his business that he built, and he was very prideful about it. And you know, the short version of a very long story is he just couldn't let it go to anybody. So next steps, and this was over like 6-8 months, eventually he came to the decision. He called me over to the house with him and his wife, mm-hmm. and said, I'm shutting it down. I'm going to shut it down. Thank you for everything you've tried to do. The investors that we brought in from all over the country, we're shutting it down.
How'd you feel when you heard that?
I was hysterically crying. Mm-hmm. And we hugged. And
this is the only job you ever had.
Only job I ever had.
Wait, holy shit. This is the only job you ever had.
Two little kids. Only job I've ever had. And he said, I hope you stay with German wine and talk to one of the other importers. I hope you stay in German wine.
Yeah.
And I said, I will. And I went home and I did not sleep a minute that night. And I called Andrea Versching. And I said, because the best investor meeting we had was with the owner of Kartoiserhof.
Mm-hmm.
I said, if I can have Rudy's support, I said, please don't tell the other growers, because everyone's hanging on to figure out what the solution's going to be.
Right.
Please don't tell the other growers, but Rudy's going to shut it down. Do you think that his name's Albert Baylor, the
what
owner
would
of
back me?
What if I start something new?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I just was thinking all night, it can't be over. I was just told it's over, but I still it can't be over.
Yeah.
She said, you know, I think he could be. I called his business advisor that I was working with when I was trying to continue Rudy V Selections. And he said, I think he could be interested in a new company. So then I drove over to Rudy's house and said, I think there might be an opportunity to continue the portfolio. Would I have your blessing? And they both cried and said 100%. So then I called the investor back, the investor's business advisor back. And said what I wanted to do. And he said, okay, well, can you put together a fresh business plan? Sure, I can Google anything. Yes, absolutely. And
sure, I went to Sonoma State. You might have heard of it. Right up there next to Harvard Business School.
I had a 3.1 and the Yale School of Management. Sonoma State. Yeah. So that's where the family.
I could have went to Berkeley. I could have went to Stanford, but I didn't want to go work in tech.
I barely survived Sonoma State. I have my diploma, and I'm proud of it. So he said that Mr. Baylor was leaving for Europe on Tuesday. Could you put something together by Monday? This is Thursday.
And Baylor was in New York? Or was he?
Yes.
Yeah, so then you had to go back to fucking New York.
New York. So I had 3 days to put together a business plan for a whole new company. Meanwhile, talking to the growers, I had to sign an NDA at that point and just tell them, I can't say anything, but I have a plan. I'm going to execute a plan. So my dad, my brother, my friends, I don't know why I was at my mom's house. I had my own place, but I was at my mom's house for those whole 3 days. I didn't go to sleep, and we put together a business
plan. Your mom was taking care of the kids. That's why you're at your mom's house. I'll tell you why. I'm a genius.
You are a genius. I was at my mom's house so she could take care of the kids and I could put together a business plan. Yes. But my brother, my dad, everybody was involved in this whole business plan. And my dad, because he started companies, would be like, oh, well, you need to do this or that. I'm like, Dad, that doesn't apply to the wine business. And I'd get no one slept in 2 days. We were all at each other's throats. And so I finish the business plan. I submit it to the business advisor. And he's like, get on a plane. So I took a red eye to New York. I'll never forget it. Went to his office building, presented a new company, which I didn't have a name for at the time, and I forgot about that part until I was in the meeting and he asked me, and that's where I made up the German Wine Collection. No,
Strange.
The
German Wine Collection. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and he said, well, what if we want to sell wine that's not German? I said, we won't. He said, then it's a great name. That was it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then it's 2020.
This was 2019.
Thinking,
right. Okay. Oh, we got through the hard part. Oh, right. The hard part's over.
Right?
Now we just have to launch a company.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Wait. And also, he had no concern about tariffs. Remember tariffs back then? Tariffs were an issue? Oh, yeah.
I talk about not sleeping because we were, like, transitioning through a company. Tariffs. That's another, like, sleepless situation. because, yeah, I mean,
because that would affect the price. That would have.
It did, in fact. I mean, yeah. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in tariffs we had to spend as a new company. It's just ridiculous. But at the time, the tariffs were, you know, presented to, you know, an investor as a short-term problem. And this right. is going to be a long-term like, company.
Don't worry. This motherfucker will be out of office soon.
Yeah, we'll never see him again. He'll be gone. We'll never hear from him again.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, I could see our sound tech is cracking up.
Start not sleeping again. oh, my gosh. Yeah, so... Our initial product, like I hired on the team February 17th. I know that because the PPP loans for new companies, yep. everyone had to be hired by February 15th. I hired everybody February 17th. It's funny now, right? I'm like, someday this will be funny. Maybe today's the day.
Well, that's literally...
It was not funny at the time.
I know.
Yeah. And our initial product hit the second week of April 2020. And we, at the time, the
business... That was like, what, 2 weeks after we shut the country down?
And at the time, we sold 80% on premise.
Wow.
So it was like, I thought we were through the worst of it. We had to figure out the path forward for the Rudy V's portfolio. We had to find, you know, an investor, somebody to own this company. We had to find, you know, the team. We had to get the growers to stick together. And some of those were, you know, 10 round interviews to get them to come with us after everything they had gone through with the former company. So the pandemic, it was almost like, you've got to be kidding. Like, this is a historic situation that's never happened. And we have to figure out now, as a company that sells to restaurants that prides themselves on food pairings.
80%.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I just thank you for giving me an opportunity to just talk about it very briefly because this is a great story. But there's this thing. It's an economic principle. It's called the Pareto principle or the 80-20 principle. And usually... Yeah, you sold the 80%, but like 80%, like is it 80-20 breaks down in different ways, but that seems to be the mathematical thing in life is like, should have split 80-20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we focus and out on
that 80%, and out of that 80% that you sold to restaurants, 20% of 80% was most of your fucking income. If you go back, I guarantee you, if you go through and run the numbers, like, holy shit, it was like these five restaurants did more, even out of that 80%, 20% fucking, but anyway.
Yep.
I just... Like to, that's the life part of this. You know, like to throw in little nuggets
yeah.
out of my brain to you that are, maybe you'll find them useful, maybe.
It's yeah. important.
But so then you have this pivot.
Pivot, that's the word. Like if there's anything, when you say like an expert in German wine, absolutely not, never will be, I'll always be an enthusiast. If there's anything I'm an expert at, it would probably be pivoting at this point. Like, oh, that didn't work. Okay, we'll do this. Oh, that didn't work. Oh, you said no. Well, that's a misunderstanding. I'll find a yes somewhere else. Like, pivot. That's the word. That's what we've done from day one. And I keep waiting like, oh, well, you know, 2024 will be our first normal year. Like, normal is just not even a word anymore. What does that mean?
Yeah, there's no new normal.
No new
there's
normal.
There's no new normal. There's no normal. What is just what is.
What is the situation right now,
right.
and how are we going to thrive in it? That's right. all we can do.
Mm-hmm. I once read a quote a long time, like, the future belongs to those who can be flexible. Like, it's flexibility.
I haven't heard that, but yeah.
That's like an old metaphysical quote. you wouldn't have heard it.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
But, like, so what was the pivot? What was the pivot?
Retail. Delivery to your door.
Okay.
National retail chains. Like, how are we going to... We have all this product landing in April of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do? And so we were very fortunate to, like, start a national partnership with wine.com where wine could be delivered to your door. It's like, how are people getting their wine right now? And how can we
You're
be a part of it?
Pretty fucking smart.
I don't know about that. I'm very stubborn.
No, I know people... I mean, I guess...
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Yeah. smart has lots of definitions, right? But... You definitely have something that's...
I like what I'm doing, and I want to keep doing it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
To pull that shit off.
Dry farm wine, delivery to your door. People like to open their door, and it's there. Yeah. That was the pandemic, so how are we a part of it?
How did the... Because you had this one, but like, how did the produce... So do you have everyone who was with Rudy?
We lost a few.
Okay.
We lost a few. We lost one, actually, as I was walking into the investor meeting. And that's when I was like, this is make it or break it. This has to happen right now. And I had to ask him if I could break the NDA to tell them what's happening.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
But
95% of it, yes.
Well, fuck those other 5% of people.
No, they're great.
I know they're great, but I'm just like, you know, I'm like, fuck you, man. You ain't stick with me, B.
That's their business.
No, I know.
You know, they had to do what they
had to do. Hey, guys, Jenna did not say fuck you.
No, absolutely not.
Okay? I did. I don't know you. It's a joke. This is like I need to like, it's like, this is like moderately educational and definitely mildly entertaining. At least it entertains me.
Absolutely very entertained.
No, but because that would happen. There's some people just can't. I mean, like.
They were waiting pressure. For a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Pressure. You know, like Gangstar said, can't handle the whole weight. You handled the whole weight, though. You handled the whole weight of this thing.
Yeah.
See, you know what's so funny? When you're in it, you don't realize it, but like now, like.
Looking back on
like,
it,
like, crazy. Like, you're going to meetings. My man is in a tracksuit.
That's one of my favorite moments, though.
That's
really
so cool.
Was.
Like, he's like and, he lived out west, or where did Rudy?
Yeah.
But when you say he's like. He was in a tracksuit. I'm thinking of somebody's grandfather with the big fucking glasses down at Miami Beach in his tracksuit, his Sergio Tacchini. Yep. I've been doing business for years. I'm just going to go.
Not today,
meeting.
Rudy. Yeah. You're going to go change. Today you're going to change, Rudy. We're going to save the business.
Right.
We're going to save the business. You're going to change.
And mm-hmm. and like I said, his wife's involved.
Yes.
And this is like your family.
That's what I was going to say. Family.
Yeah. Like your parents have been involved through your whole career. Your brother. Mm-hmm. Your sorority sisters, even though they say you weren't in the sorority.
We're sorority at this point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, like, I can't imagine going to his house like, that's it, it's over. You know?
I never thought that was going to happen.
Right. But I think that's the key thing. You're like, not on my watch. It's not going to happen. I've thought about shutting this podcast down, man. I'm like, nah. I'm like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
What do you mean, what are you going to do?
What am I mean, like, if I shut the podcast, what am I going to do? Why would, you know?
You're doing it.
Well, I keep doing it. But you know, people don't know how many times, like, it's time to shut this shit down. This is not.
No, you say not even, today.
Not even break evenable. I'm going to say probably it's not even break evenable.
Evenable. It's not going to make break evenable.
Yeah.
You just say not today.
Well, that's why.
Then you figure out tomorrow.
Then I go, then I get an email and it's like, yeah, oh, that was a great podcast. Or then I get a call and then I get to go. And then I meet somebody like you and then like. That's why this is happening now. Like it almost got shut down when like shit was fucked up back in the summer of 2023. Really fucked up.
Oh gosh, I didn't know.
Yeah, that. Well, nobody knows. I don't really talk about it, but like, but when I hear your story, like I don't have like I'm like, yeah, I don't have fucking $100 to rent a fucking studio. I can't interview you, like you know.
Yeah.
And you don't tell people like, yeah, I'm sick.
Yeah.
I think I got COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not going to happen today.
Day. But like your story's so inspiring. I really hope people, because it is. It's like you just gotta, like you. It wasn't happening for you. What I've heard is it was not going to happen.
It was not going to happen.
And,
it's done.
And even more important, because it wasn't about you. It was about the people you'd worked with all that time.
100%. Yes. Do I love doing what I do? Yes. Do I want to do this for the rest of my life? Absolutely. And I knew that at 22 years old.
So lucky.
I know, but as a graduating college, I had no idea until that post-it on a business card came.
I mean, if you ever talk about like, you're like, I'm waiting for a sign.
It's like, I should maybe call this guy because I don't know what I'm going to do. Yeah. And that's where it's like the biggest lesson is like, don't ever brush anything off. You never know what it could lead to. You just don't.
No, it's true. Like, and it's staying in the game.
Yeah.
It's staying in the game.
You get a no, that's just a misunderstanding. You go find a yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
It is crazy. All right, we've come to a time in the podcast where we play a little game.
Oh.
It's called Slap, Lick, Fondle. I'm going to give you three grapes. Which one are you slapping? Which one are you licking? Which one do you fondle?
Okay.
And I love this because.
Slap, lick, fondle.
Yeah.
All right.
It was fuck, marry, kill, but.
I know that game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I introduced that into wine, and then like for like a year and a half, and then Psalm TV tried to steal that shit from me, so I was like, fuck you. I will do Slap, Lick, Fondle because it's even better.
It'd be really fun to play this game like within our company with all our weird German varieties.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, we're going to take this.
Yeah,
we're
so you take it and play, you know, go play this with your team. and little back, so I got it from Brooke Sobel, who used to buy for Gary's. I don't know if you know Brooke, but Brooke now works for Pay Vineyards. And anyway, and we were just at a tasting at a friend's house who's a realtor, and she broke out you know, FMK and wine. And so, you know, and but then I was watching, I was up late one night watching cable. And I had this one weird channel because cable's really, I don't even care, weird. Anyway, 24/7 Laughs and Tosh 2.0 was on. And man, yeah. You just can't. I'll be 56 in June. The golden age of comedy is over. You could just say shit. But anyway, so he used to do FMK on his show, but then he was like, nah. You're not going to, no one's ever going to kill anybody, right? So he said, I'm going to change it
Why
up.
Why not? It's like hypothetical. It's like
no, but like, so then he changed the slap like vinyl and people were sitting in videos like, three people would line up, someone would get slapped, someone would get, like, so I was like, that's even better.
Yeah. How do you do that with wine though? Because it depends.
Well.
I just have to not overthink it. I'm an overthinker.
No, I tell you.
Throw out answers.
All right. So Spot Burgunder, because she brought a bottle out.
Yeah.
We gotta put Riesling in there.
Yeah. Oh, I have to choose between Spätburgunder and Riesling.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be fucking easy. I thought it was really Yellowtail.
I was gonna say, that's not a grape, but it almost should be its own thing, right?
Right, exactly,
its own variety.
All right, so.
Spätburgunder.
Yeah. Riesling. And then because we brought it up, and I know you probably drink, but because it, people saying it's the future of Germany, Chardonnay.
Oh, you're making me decide. What am I doing with them? I'm slapping.
You get
them
to slap one grape, you get to lick one grape, and you get a funnel. Now, here's the thing with a slap, because I know where your mind went. Because a lot of people's like, it could be like slap like I hate you, or like slap that ass. So that's your choice. So who, you know.
I mean, Chardonnay is going to be slap that ass just because it's like, are we really, like when I started in the industry, am I going to be talking about Chardonnay?
I know, right?
Yeah.
You're like, damn girl, damn boy.
Yeah, wow. Here we are talking about
talking about German Chardonnay. Bam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Spätburgunder, I'm going to lick it. I mean, I drink it. I'll lick it. But like, I will always fondle Riesling. It needs time. Right? And you open it, you come back to it a few days later. Like, a lot of the Grand Crus are better on day 3 and 4. Got to fondle the Riesling.
Love it. Great answer. Thank you for playing. last question.
All right.
Not that I really have questions. This is all for show. Make my shit look professional.
So professional.
What are you most excited about in the future?
Ooh. I'm most excited. I don't know. That's so hard because I'm excited about everything. I'm excited for the opportunity to build upon something that's been in the United States for 40 years. I'm excited to continuing developing the relationships with the next generation at these wineries because we've kind of, the next generation has taken over kind of when the German Wine Collection launched.
Mm-hmm.
So that's super exciting. I'm excited for the relationships like that all of us in our company have and the adventures ahead of us in Germany. Yeah, I'm excited to continue to travel and get to know all these people in these different markets. We have distributors I still haven't met in certain states. So that took us on during a pandemic on a Zoom call. I mean, we have 50 distributors and we had to build all that during a pandemic.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So I'm excited to be able to meet with people in person, travel, and continue to build this.
That's awesome. Jenna Fields, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. This is fun.
That's the whole point.
Yeah? Yeah. Makes sense.
tell people how they can find you, how they can be a part of what you're doing with the German Wine Collection.
All right. So our Instagram is The German Wine Collection. It should be easy to find. Our website is thegwc.com to find more information about us, our team, our producers. And yeah, with a list of our distributors so that you can find all the wines in each individual state in the country. So.
Fantastic. For all you listeners out there, don't forget to check out the show notes for each episode. I'll list the wine we drank. I'll put her website. I'll put their socials in there so you can follow, stay in touch with Jenna. And until the next time, cheers to the Mavericks, the philosophers, the deep thinkers, and all you wine drinkers. It's your boy MJ. Peace.
Prost.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you learned something and had some fun while you were here. Please subscribe to the podcast so that you are notified when a new episode drops. Also, we'd love it if you take a few seconds and give us a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening on. And don't forget to go over to beatsvinesandlife.com and get on the mailing list to stay in the know.